Hello, and welcome to the 180 Degree Capital Annual Meeting of Shareholders. I just want to begin the meeting. This is Daniel Wolfe, President of 180 Degree Capital. Just want to begin the meeting by letting everyone know that we are recording the meeting, and also that there may be discussions during the question and answer period, which contain forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are governed by the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act. We are under no obligation to update any information discussed that could be considered a forward-looking statement, and you should look at our SEC filings for any information on the company going forward. I will now turn the call or turn the meeting over to Kevin Rendino, our Chairman and CEO.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am Kevin Rendino, Chairman of the Board and Chief Executive Officer of 180 Degree Capital Corp, and I will be chairing this meeting. I now call this meeting to order and welcome our shareholders and guests to the 180 Degree Capital Corp 2017 Annual Meeting of Shareholders. Before making introductions, I would like to review the program for the meeting. We will begin by covering the business of the meeting as outlined in the proxy. We will end the meeting with an informal session during which we will entertain questions from shareholders and attendees of this meeting, whether they are present in person or by phone. We would like to ask that you hold all questions and comments to the designated question and comments period. During the formal portion of the meeting, please restrict questions and comments at that time to the four proposals submitted for vote of our shareholders in our proxy materials. Please hold all other questions to the informal portion of this meeting. We ask that all questions and comments be directed to me for response or referral to the appropriate officer and director, and that you be as brief as possible to allow everyone who wishes an opportunity to participate. Also, please identify yourself before speaking and tell us if you are a shareholder or a proxy for a shareholder. If you are a proxy for a shareholder, please identify the shareholder. I would like to introduce our directors and officers who are present with me today in person or by phone. Our directors, Stacey R. Brandon, Charles E. Ramsey, Richard P. Shanley, and Daniel B. Wolfe. Officers Daniel B. Wolfe, and I think Alicia will be joining us shortly. Alicia has been designated the Inspector of Election and is present today. The inspector has signed her oath, and the secretary has been instructed to file the oath with the records of this meeting. I'm informed that a quorum is present for the transaction of business. Proper notice of this meeting was duly mailed on or about April 28th, 2017, to all holders of record on April 18th, 2017, and the affidavit of the transfer agent confirms such mailing. The secretary will please file the affidavit with the records of the company and a copy with the minutes of this meeting. April 18th, 2017, is the record date for the voting of shares at this meeting. As of the record date, the company had 31,121,562 shares of common stock outstanding. We will now proceed with the formal business of the meeting. At this meeting, shareholders are voting to elect five directors to the board of directors to serve until the next annual meeting or until their respective successors are elected. The five persons nominated by the board of directors are Stacey R. Brandon, Charles E. Ramsey, Kevin M. Rendino, Richard P. Shanley, and Daniel B. Wolfe. The board of directors recommends that the shareholders vote for the election of the board's five nominees as directors of the company. The second item of business is the approval of the audit committee's selection of PricewaterhouseCoopers as the independent registered public accountant for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2017. The board of directors recommends that the shareholders vote for this proposal. The third item of business is the approval on an advisory basis of the executive compensation as described in the compensation discussion and analysis and the accompanying tabular and narrative disclosures set forth in the proxy statement for this annual meeting. The board of directors recommends that the shareholders vote for this proposal. The fourth and final item of business is to vote on an advisory basis the frequency of shareholder votes on compensation. The board of directors recommends that shareholders vote for, quote, "3 years" on this proposal. We will now take questions or comments relating to the specific agenda items. Proposal number one, the election of directors. Proposal number two, the authorization for the audit committee selection of PricewaterhouseCoopers as the independent registered public accountant for the fiscal year ending December 31st, 2017. Although representatives of PricewaterhouseCoopers are not present in person or by phone, they are available for questions via phone. Proposal 3, the advisory vote on executive compensation, and Proposal 4, the frequency of the advisory vote on executive compensation. I ask that you please hold any general questions or comments until the designated question and comment period later in the proceedings. When you are recognized, please address your comments or questions or comments to me, and either I or another officer of the company will respond. Also, when you are recognized, please state your name and whether you're a 180 degree capital shareholder or a proxy for a shareholder. The floor is now open for your questions on Proposal 1, Proposal 2, 3, or 4. Are there any questions? Are there any questions on the phone? Hearing none, we'll move on. The question and comment period is concluded, and the polls are now open. The Inspector of Election will distribute forms of proxy to those who wish to vote here at the meeting. Remember, if you previously have voted by proxy, you do not need to vote again unless you wish to change your vote. Submission of a proxy at this meeting revokes any prior proxies you may have submitted. If any shareholder desires a form of proxy, please raise your hand and it will be distributed to you. Seeing none. Those of you who are voting at this meeting should do so now. When you have completed your proxy, it will be collected by the inspector. The polls will close shortly, so I request the Inspector of Elections to collect all proxies now. And there are any proxies to be submitted? The answer to that appears to be no. If there are no further proxies, I declare the polls closed for the matters voted on. With the agenda items now having been voted on, I will adjourn the formal portion of this meeting. I have now received the voting report, and all of the board's 5 nominees have been elected as directors. Approval has been given to retain PricewaterhouseCoopers as independent registered public accountant for the fiscal year on December 31st, 2017. Approval has been given on an advisory basis for the overall compensation of the company's named executive officers. And approval has been given on an advisory basis for the overall compensation of the company's named executive officers to be presented to the company's shareholders for an advisory vote every 3 years, if such vote is required by regulation or law. The floor is now open for general questions or comments that you may have. As most of you know, our private equity investments are governed by confidentiality requirements, and we will be unable to discuss certain specific information concerning these investments. After I recognize you, please state your name and identify yourself as a shareholder or a proxy for a shareholder. Are there any questions, either in person or by the phone?
Are you going to make a presentation?
I'm not going to make a formal presentation or an informal presentation today. You hopefully were able to listen to our last earnings call. We'll have another earnings call once the June quarter expires in July, and we'll spend an hour talking about not only the quarter, but some of the strategic things that we've done within the quarter that we'll want to talk about at that time. Please.
Yeah, Sam Robotsky, I'm a shareholder. Since you've taken over, what type of reaction have you getting from potential shareholders? I noticed that Charlie Harris's position during this period, according to the proxy, was sold. Does it appear to be you're getting a lot more interest? What type of interest you're getting? Initially, after the conference call, there was a lot of activity. What's your expectation going forward?
So on the first day that we made the announcement, is this still on, Daniel? On the first announcement that we made the CEO change and started as 180 Degree Capital, we offered up a press release early that morning. I think the stock was $1.31 when we started. Within 2 hours, we received a number of calls from investors who had seen that press release, including one who told me by 11 o'clock he'd already bought a few 100,000 shares in the market because he liked the change of strategy. He liked the fact that we were reducing our costs. He liked the name change. He liked all of it. And subsequent to that day, we've had a number of inbound inquiries into our strategy, number of hedge funds, small private wealth offices. And so we've had a number of inbound of questions. And I, although we haven't seen, all the quarter-ending shareholder account numbers, we expect to see new shareholders by the end of June, ones that we didn't have towards the end of March. We've also, by way of announcing our first step in our new direction, our investment in Synacor, which we made public when we took a position in that company early in April, we also received a number of inbound questions and comments of people that were interested in Synacor, either shareholders of Synacor or interested parties in Synacor. And by those conversations, talking about Synacor, they didn't know who we were. We start talking about what we're doing. And so we've had a number of interesting conversations with regards to people that are interested in our public holdings as well. So we expect by the end of June that we'll be able to report on hopefully two other public companies that we own. That will be our goal. We'll be able to talk about them in our next earnings call. And I think the more we talk about the things that we're doing, the more interest we're getting, not only in those positions, but in our business in general. And we think that is going to help us. If you remember our strategy, one is to grow our NAV, two is to narrow the discount of our stock to our NAV, and third is to begin the process of attracting outside capital, raising third-party money. We think all the conversations that we're having with interested parties are going to help us and allow us to raise capital much easier than we would have otherwise before.
Does it appear that you might get research coverage based on the people you're talking to?
I think it's too early to know about research coverage. Remember, we DBDC, so we're no longer a BDC. And there are a couple of prevalent sell-side firms that cover BDCs. We're just a closed-end fund now. And so we think that's in the best interest of shareholders because we were able to reduce our cost significantly. But given our size and the fact that we're no longer a BDC, it's taken us outside the world of traditional Wall Street research. That doesn't mean that we're not going to go out and try and find people that are going to be interested in covering us from the sell side. Interestingly enough, if anybody saw the article, if you didn't, we can send it to you. But somebody wrote on us last week, and I think, Daniel, that was in Seeking Alpha. Yeah, somebody wrote an article on us in Seeking Alpha. So we've gotten people to write on us, and not just the traditional sell-side boutiques that we all know about. The other person that wrote about us in the quarter was a gentleman called us from Merger Markets, because he saw that we had filed a 13D on Adesto, which is our biggest public holding. We own nearly 11% of Adesto. And he covers the activist world, I guess, in small cap tech for Merger Markets. He saw that we had done that filing, and we spent a considerable time on the phone with him because he was interested not only in learning about our feelings on Adesto, but also in learning our, trying to understand what we were doing at 180 Degree Capital. And he wrote a whole big story on us. So that kind of publicity is good for us as we think about raising third-party funds. And again, if you're interested in seeing that article, we can send that to you, in the next day or so.
I'm sorry, it's Joe Pernicola, shareholder.
Hi, Joe.
Over a decade. Can you just give us an update on the net asset value now and what mechanism you use to determine your net asset value? I don't think there's a third party involved with that valuation. Is that right?
No, there is a third party. Dan, you want to come up and talk about our net asset value?
Yeah, so with the change from a BDC to a closed-end fund, there's no change in our financial reporting in terms of how we determine net asset value per share. We still report it on a quarterly basis. The forms on which we report it are slightly different. They're not the long 10Qs and 10Ks, but they are what's called an NQ and an NCSR, which are what we'll be filing on the June 30th and the 12/31 year end. But the NAV is still determined the same way. The board, the management team prepares detailed valuation memos that include what's going on in our portfolio companies that are privately held. Those are then reviewed by oftentimes Duff and Phelps, and we work with them on valuation methodologies. And then at the year end, they are audited by PwC. And the valuations are set by the board of directors.
And you're only mostly talking about the companies that we own with private interest in, not the ones that are publicly traded, like the one you recently acquired, Synacor, because that's pretty...
Publicly traded investments are valued at based on, as long as they're traded in an active market, which the ones we're talking about are, those are valued at the closing price on the last day of the quarter.
I know we're trying to prepare some of the private companies for IPOs, E-Wave, and a few others that are coming down the road. Is the strategy for the company going forward is to continue to invest in private companies and bring them public in the future, or to try to stick only with publicly traded entities that, will be able to give our net asset value some real visibility?
So it's Kevin Rendino. So if you think about our NAV, it was $2.43 at the end of the March quarter, which is around $75 million in assets. Roughly $55 million of that was in private equity holdings, and roughly $20 million of that was in cash or liquid securities, companies that trade publicly. Which is why our discount to NAV is so significant, because it's of the esoteric nature of our portfolio. It's in private businesses that we understand what the valuations are, but clearly shareholders that voted with their with the stock trading at $1.50, they're not willing to pay us for what the businesses are worth today. The goal for this business is in 3 years or 5 years or some period of time that every dollar of money that we manage, every dollar in our asset of our assets is going to be either in cash or public securities. If that's the case, you can expect our stock to trade at or near NAV. If it was all cash, you would expect our stock to trade at NAV or at least maybe at a discount to what our burn rate is. There will be no new investments in any new private equity holdings. There may be add-on investments in certain private equity holdings that we have that are necessary for those companies to continue to exist. Nowhere near the amount of money that we were investing in over the prior one, two, three, or however many years you want to look back. This is now, every new dollar is going to be invested in the public markets, and if it's not invested in the public markets, it's going to be returned to shareholders via either share repurchase and or dividends. That's the strategy. Very simple. It's basic value 101.
So can I get a clarification? You are only investing in domestic U.S.-based companies, or are you going outside the U.S.?
We expect to primarily be a, I don't want to say never, but we're a U.S. investor in small micro-cap companies. By the way, those companies have real revenues, good management teams, real cash flow, trading at below book or 10 times earnings. They're not fly-by-night biotech companies where the promise of tomorrow leaves you with a valuation that doesn't make any sense in the current day. So we're investing in real businesses. It's Graham and Dodd value investing. It just happens to be in market caps that are a lot lower than the ones I used to invest when I was at BlackRock and Merrill Lynch, like GE and Honeywell Press. But the real business.
Can I follow up again on that? Sorry.
Go ahead.
The number of companies that you are evaluating them in that space you just described is about how many do you evaluate a month, though? How many do you expect to
make? I would expect to have no more than 8 or 10 of those names in the portfolio, given where our current size is. Now, if we go out and raise $100 million, maybe the number will be more like 10 or 15. But it's not going to be 80, 70, 60, or 50. This is not going to be a diversified mutual fund. This is going to be a concentrated portfolio invested in public companies where we can take big positions, hopefully help management. I mean, the idea of our name, 180 degrees, means we're investing in companies that for one reason or another are orphaned, not doing well. Our goal is to invest in those businesses at valuations that are low relative to the true worth of their business over time, and help them get to the next place. whether it's by instituting a new IR department, helping them make proper asset allocation decisions, looking at the board and making sure that the board is there to actually evaluate management and is not there sort of to line their own pockets and making sure that corporate governance is being adhered to in those businesses. So whatever we can do as investors to help businesses kind of make that quote-unquote turn, which is our symbol, that's what we're going to spend time doing. And it's going to be in a few names, not in 70 or 80 names.
Maybe let's
we'll take one more and then we'll go on.
Ariel Capital is our largest shareholder.
Yep.
Do we have an arrangement with them where we can go a period of time before they is there anything in the agreement where they could say, well, we want to get out or decide to buy all of us?
Ariel is an independent asset management business. We know them well, given the fact that they're our biggest shareholder. We've spent a lot of time with them. They actually do what we do. They invest in small microcap companies. So not only do we have a relationship in that they own us and they want to understand what we're doing, but we've also been able to share ideas with them too, given they do what we do. But there's no arrangement. If they wanted to sell all their stock tomorrow, they can sell all their stock tomorrow. If they wanted to double their position tomorrow, they can double their position tomorrow. Yeah, please.
I'm Greg Clerfield, a shareholder. You talked about significantly reducing your expenses in 2017. You're almost halfway through the year. How much do you hope to reduce expenses by?
Our burn factor, if you look at our normalized operating expenses, were roughly 8% of our assets in 2016, give or take a few basis points. We expect that burn rate will be less than 5%, closer to 4%. And that reduction in burn is not going to take a year. It was overnight. You're going to see the change in our cost structure as quickly as this quarter.
$3+ million this year.
I think it's going to be close. Yeah, $3+ million. We had an office. There's a couple moving targets. So we've already taken out people expenses. They're gone. But there's other things that we are reducing as well. We have an office space in Manhattan. I think many of you have probably been there, 1450 Broadway. That lease expires in 2019. We're hopeful that we'll be able to sublet that space and therefore have a significant reduction in our cost for office space that we simply don't need. It's just too big for us. We moved our corporate offices, as you know, to Montclair, New Jersey. So there are things that we do every day where we try and figure out where we can reduce costs and where we can. I can tell you that our Amex bill in May was 80% less than when it was before we became 180-degree capital. And those, we have an eye on the costs. Unfortunately, shareholders have borne the brunt of a high expense base for a long period of time. And it's our judgment and our stated policy is we want to get those expenses as low as they can so that the hurdle rate is low so that any investment gains that we have will be above and beyond the burn. The goal here is to grow the NAV. And when you have an 8% OPEX as a percentage of net assets, even if you have a normal market year, which is 8%, you're just treading water. So that's why we reduce them.
Now, closed-end funds, if they have much over 1% management fee, will trade at a big discount. And if you're going up to several percent management fee, you might get even a bigger discount.
Well, we think our discount is there not because we're a closed-end fund. We think our discount is there because, as I mentioned earlier, the esoteric nature of our private holdings. I'm not suggesting that our stock would trade at NAV or higher if we were all cash, but it'd be a heck of a lot higher than it is currently. There's always discounts to NAV that exist in the closed-end world or the BDC world. I'm firmly aware of that. I don't expect that necessarily to change, which is why priority one is to grow the NAV. Because even if you can't narrow the discount, if you grow the NAV and the discounts stay the same, the stocks should continue to rise. But closed-end funds are BDCs. I mean, that's what a BDC is a closed-end fund. We're running the same thing that we were running before, except we're doing it at a much reduced cost because we no longer SOX compliance and all the filings that we had to do, K's and Q's we no longer have to do, audit fees are down and the rest. That's why we changed from a BDC to a closed-end fund. But we do recognize the inherent nature of
BDC. If you have even 4% of management fee relationship to your assets, I would expect a very big discount in the marketplace.
I would expect a discount. I wouldn't expect a 50% discount, which is basically almost where we're trading.
I think the way to think about it is we've worked to take out as much of the expense base as we can with where we are today. Obviously, we want to grow this thing. So when we think of the expenses on a overall net level, would we like to be, our goal would be to get to closer to 2-ish%, which is a standard, you know, sort of expense rate.
So getting close to 1%?
Like a 2%. If we could get to 2%, it'd be great, right? But to do that, it's not going to be reducing expenses. It's going to be increasing the denominator. It's going to be increasing our asset base. That's what we're what we've done is we've right-sized the ship. Now we're focused on growing.
We can grow. We can, it's going to be top. It's going to be assets. We can run the same expense base. You can layer on $200 million more of capital. Maybe we hire one person, who knows. But we don't need more people to do what we're doing. And if we had more assets, we don't need to raise the expense base. Our goal is, that's why we want to do the third-party fund stuff. Because we can take on more assets. The other thing we want to do is, if we're right about our public holdings, we mentioned Synacor, there's a couple other ones. I mean, we want those things to go up in value over time too. And we're looking at 100% return for some of our public holdings. So that's another way, obviously, in organically to grow our asset base, is to make sure whatever you're buying in the public markets goes up. The other thing is, we do have private equity holdings, whether it's AgMime or D-Wave, ACO, Tara, you name it. One day they're going to throw off cash to us. And we'll use that cash to make investments in public companies, and hopefully those public companies will go up in value, and that's how we're going to build it, NAV organically. And then we're going to do the inorganic thing by raising outside capital.
Have you thought about a rights offering?
Yeah, a number of people have suggested that we do that. I mean, we can do it tomorrow and raise money. I think that, we can pull shareholders on that over time, but the last thing that I want to do in my first 2 months of being here is to dilute shareholders.
What's that dilution if everybody has the option of buying enough?
I understand. But it's also raising your share count, and you can do a reverse split. We thought about a rights offer, and it's not something that we're contemplating. Let's put it that way. It's not something that we're contemplating in the next quarter or so. But let's see if we can go out and inorganically raise capital from the outside world. That'll be a much more accretive way to do what we want to do without adding to our share count.
And I'll just add to that by saying, we don't have a registration statement on file. You will see a registration statement that gets filed. It's not to register shares for sale. It's to complete our transition to a closed-end fund. So it has nothing to do with offering shares. It's literally just a filing to make that complete and be done with that whole transition. But we have 31 million shares outstanding, which means we need $30 million in gains to be able to move our NAV by a dollar. Issuing more shares at this level just makes that hurdle even harder. And, you know, at this point, I think we can never predict what happens with returns. But with the visibility we have, we believe that there is capital for us to continue to be able to invest into our new strategy coming from our current portfolio, but then also looking to raise these third-party funds where we can manage third-party capital.
And we don't need money to do what we're doing. It'd be nice to have, but rights offerings usually occur because companies need money to do something. There's other paths that we're going to take first before we get there.
There's a couple of questions on the phone here.
Okay.
James, please go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering. I see that Mersana has filed to go public. I was wondering, are they going to be going public in the next few months, or do you have any more information on that?
So if you remember on the last call, we talked about hopefully the potential for some of our holdings to come public. Mersana has obviously filed a public document saying they want to do an IPO. I think the goal is for them to be on the road sooner rather than later. And if they're on the road sooner rather than later, you can expect, if all goes well in terms of price talk, usually IPOs occur 2 weeks after that. So I think if it goes well, it's more of a one-month or two-month process versus a 3 to 6 month process. Daniel, is there anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, I think the document has already been through the SEC. They filed confidentially, and so the hope is that if the markets hold up, that they're able to take advantage.
And I just want to say one other thing. If there are opportunities for us to sell into rounds, private holdings are always raising money, and whether it's Series B, A, C, D, liquidation, stacks, preferences, options, all of it. If there's enough demand in a certain round that for us it makes sense to take money out, if they're oversubscribed in that round, then we'll do that too. I mean, that's something that we'll contemplate. We did that in the fourth quarter in the Tavalon, if you remember. And we might do that with other of our holdings. We've made it very apparent that many of our holdings, many of our private companies, they know they can't really come to us anymore for capital because they understand what our new strategy is. We've made that very apparent to them. And it's not that they, it's not only can they not come to us for more money, and they can, the answer is probably going to be no, but also we're more as interested or more interested in taking money out if rounds are oversubscribed. And so Daniel is very busy with our holdings. Even if companies don't come public, how can we extract value out of our private holdings sooner rather than later? And so we're exploring those ways too. The more cash that we can get from private, put it into public, we think the better chance it is that our stock rises closer to NAV.
Any other questions, James?
No, thank you.
Very good. Hi, please go ahead.
It's Bob Little-Hale, shareholder. I apologize for perhaps having you go over some territory you've covered before, but can you review the Synacor investment? It reflects the strategy of constructive activism, leading to a reversal of direction, as you characterize part of your strategy. Can you relate it to the company as you see it? This is a company that sold at 18 back in 2012. Obviously you participated in a follow-on offering for the company, which I think provided you an optimal price, short-term price. Just review the strategy thinking on Synacor and what would your sale process be as it relates to this type of investment? What would you want to see to obviously exit the investment?
Okay, Bob, thanks for your question on Synacor. So let me give you the 64,000 foot view. So Synacor is a portal business, i.e., what that means is they run the websites for companies like Verizon or AT&T. If you go to AT&T.net, that website is run by other companies. It used to be at AT&T that their website was run by Yahoo. Yahoo is also a portal company. Well, obviously, Yahoo merged with Verizon. With Verizon, and so AT&T no longer thought it appropriate that they would use Yahoo as its portal. So about a year ago, we all woke up one day, Synacor was trading at $1.50. They announced that they won a portal from AT&T, and they said at the time that it's a $100 million a year revenue business for them when it was fully deployed. Well, Synacor only has $100 million in revenue. So basically overnight, they doubled the business. And the stock reflected that. It went to 3 and change, really went to 370. And then from May of last year up until, let's call it today, Synacor has been busy investing in the deployment of that portal, spending $10 million a year through its income statement to get that portal up and running. It's about 33 cents a share. Synacor has a market cap of around $120 million with a goal of getting to, in 3 years, $300 million in revenue and $30 million in EBITDA. And it's trading at $120 million valuation. They're going to do $170 million or so, $165 million a year in sales this year. There's other businesses they have. They have an email hosting business, and they have an advertising platform. So for me, you know, activism, as we mentioned in our shareholder letter, and I think, Daniel, that presentation is on our website, there's three phases of activism. The first phase is activism has already been done. And in the case of Synacor, activism was already done. 2 years ago, activists came in there, and the board changed its CEO, and the new CEO came in and changed the structure of the business and invested in the areas that had high growth and disinvested in the areas that had low growth and put a whole new C-suite of executives there, and then they won the AT&T business. There's nothing for us really to do other than share in the hopefully success of their business over the next 3 years, going from 160 in revenue in 2017 to 300 million in 2019 is significant growth. So we think there's nothing to be done here other than let's see them execute, and if they can execute properly, stock's going to be meaningfully higher. And I don't mean a dollar higher, $2 higher. Our price target is anywhere from $7 to $8 if they can get to $300 million in 2019. The second phase of activism is when you need to do a little bit of stuff. In other words, you got to help management, you know, with their IR efforts or with their investment decks or, you know, with their board. And then the third phase of activism is, you know, full-out proxy battles, which is something that we will do if we have to. We're not going to shy away from that. We're set up to do that, and we will do that. Synacor is not one of those companies that needs us to be active in that regard. They've already done that version. So we'll, like any other investment, we'll evaluate how they're doing over time. We didn't buy this for this quarter, next quarter. We bought this for get AT&T deployed and then get to the $100 million of revenues. And if you're doing that, can you get to $30 million in EBITDA? And if you can, we expect the stock to be meaningfully higher. So we, you know, anytime we buy something, we start keeping score that day. How are you doing with your email hosting business? How are you doing with your advertising platform? How are you doing with AT&T? Are you deriving as much revenue as you said you were going to derive? We don't know if they're going to be successful or not. We clearly think they are, otherwise we wouldn't own it. And if they're not successful or they're having problems executing with the AT&T deal, then there's reasons to sell stocks too. Anytime we buy something, there's a reason for ownership. And if that reason changes, we're not going to be afraid to sell it, whether it's at a profit or at a loss. There has to be a catalyst, and there has to be a reason for ownership. And when that thesis changes, you have to be willing to cut the cord and move on to the next idea. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you, Kevin.
Any other questions from the phone first?
Yeah, we have one more. All right, please go ahead.
This is John Knapp, and I'm one of the shareholders that acquired a few shares because Kevin is in the saddle there. And so I'm excited about what Kevin is doing. Kevin, can you explain, is it possible for a layman to understand the valuation of the capital raise at D-Wave when it raised the money for a recent $50 million raise? Thank you.
Thanks for your question, John. I'm going to turn that over to Daniel.
Yeah, so the capital raise that they did and that they announced publicly was that it was a $30 million convertible note with a $20 million option that the company has upon hitting certain milestones to draw that additional capital. It has certain conversion terms that are into the next round of financing, or also into the prior round of financing if they don't raise another round of capital. More details, unfortunately, I can't provide, but it's, you know, just the structure of it is a pretty simple convertible note.
Does that help, John?
It helps, but not as with the clarity that I had hoped. But it's a start. Thank you. More questions?
And we can walk you through that offline in further detail if you want.
Great. Thank you very much.
Okay, John. Any other questions on the phone, Daniel? Okay.
I just wanted to see if you could give me an update. We've had an investment for a while in Champions Oncology, and I just want to know what's the status of that? Do we still have it, or is it going to be taken out as a loss, or is it going forward? What's going on with Champions?
I'm turning that back over to Daniel.
And Daniel, can you just remind me how many years we've had it?
Champions, we made our initial investment in, I believe it was April 2011. We actually no longer hold Champions. We actually sold out of our position at the end of last year. We actually had traded out of it a little bit beforehand where we actually made a return on our invested capital. The remainder of the position was sold at a loss. But as we had worked to transition some things in the business at the end of last year before we had this focus of investing in microcap companies.
I'm familiar with the website that we used to have for Harris & Harris. The website changed significantly. Is Champions or all the portfolio companies?
Yeah, everything's listed on our website. It's 180degreecapital.com.
Okay. You know, to that point on Champions, while we're busy embarking on a new strategy, I want everyone to understand, in addition to the strategy that we've had for 10 years, we're not walking away from our private equity holdings. We think that there is value in our private equity holdings. We think that the biggest successes that we could have in the next 3 years are going to come from our private holdings, and that to some extent, a significant portion of our success is going to come from the things that we've been doing. While we're waiting for that, we're going to figure out other ways to offset the burn. I do not want to come in 2018 and have to worry about how we're going to offset our operating expenses. That's why we've been doing the things that we've been doing, is to offset the burn while we're waiting for the private holdings to monetize. That's where our biggest leverage is going to be.
The professional fees were $1,365,000. I guess this is going to be PW, and once we don't have these private investments, the cost should be significantly less. The value of the smaller companies, publicly traded companies. Where do we want to go with that number?
Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah, so we've said publicly in the proxy that we believe that by transitioning from a business development company to a closed-end fund, we'll be able to reduce our public company-related expenses by at least $800,000. Just to give you an example, because you'll see it in our proxy anyways, I think our audit fees last year were about $477,000. This year, as a closed-end fund, and one of the reasons why we wanted to transition before the end of the first quarter so we had the full year at the lower expense rate, with our current holdings, our audit fees are expected to be below $200,000. And as we move, and out of that $200,000 or so, I'd say roughly half to a third is related to the private investments. So when you strip that part out over time, you can even get your audit fees lower. If you just look at most closed-end funds that only have publicly traded investments, their audit fees are typically between $50,000 for a big family of funds to around $100,000 to $125,000 for, and this is with a big four firm, for a portfolio of publicly traded securities of non-family related funds.
And we're keeping we're not looking to reduce our expenses further in this area by adding an auditor that none of us have heard. That's not what we're doing here. But we've been able to have significant cuts just given the structure change that took place. And I think I've talked to most of you offline. You all know how I think, right? If you can take instead of taking the Excel train to Washington, D.C., take the regional and save yourself $300, $400, I'm more than happy to sit on the train for an extra 20 minutes to save our, to save 180 degree capital money. That's just the way we think. That's always the way I've been. That doesn't mean you don't invest in your business, but the stuff that is immaterial and you need to cut it. And we've been busy cutting for the better part of the last couple, 3 months. I think our T&E budget is going to be reduced literally by 75% year over year. It makes me happy. When Daniel told me our American Express bill is down 80% month over month, that made me happy.
American Express happy.
I don't care about American Express. I care about the people in the room and the ones on the phone. Any other questions on the phone or in person? Hearing none, these proceedings are now concluded. Thank you, and we very much appreciate your interest and support of 180 Degree Capital Corp. As always, if you need to ask follow-up questions, you know where to find us. We'd be more than happy to talk with you at any point in time post this meeting. Thank you so much.